Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Teaching Here and There, the podcast that explores hybrid teaching in higher education. My name is Dom Pates. I'm a senior educational technologist at City University of London.
And I'm Ivan Sikora, associate professor at University of West London.
And I'm James Rutherford, also a senior educational technologist at City University of London.
And today we have two guests who are appearing from slightly more north than us on this island and have some perspectives to bring us around the idea of community and hybrid teaching. So let's dive straight into the conversation. I'm going to introduce our two guests today. First of all, let me go to Nottingham.
Hello, and my name is Cecilia Goria, and I am Associate Professor in the School of Cultures, Languages and Area Studies, and I'm also the Digital Learning Director for the Faculty of Arts, and I'm very pleased to be here talking to you.
Thank you very much, Cecilia. Let's head over to, shall we broadly say, the north of England. I'll let you explain, Rochelle.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So hi, I'm Rochelle O'Brien. I'm a senior digital learning designer at Durham Centre for Academic Development at Durham University. But I actually live near Liverpool, so on the opposite side of the country. And I'm a remote worker as well. So yeah, that's broadly the north of England.
I think lots of us are a lot more remote workers than we ever used to be these days as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the podcast, two of you. We're delighted to that you were able to join us today. Let's get straight into the conversation. Ivan, would you like to kick us off?
Yeah, of course. It's very nice that Rochelle and Cecilia are with us today in this changing world that we face every day. And this change has brought to us, I can say at least to me, something that I haven't experienced before. And I'd love really to check with Cecilia and Rochelle on how are your personal experiences with the synchronous hybrid teaching so far? And actually, what is the story behind your involvement in that particular stream that we are covering in our series of podcasts? Rochelle?
Thank you very much. So interesting one for me. I actually started playing about with this pre-pandemic. So I presented at a conference back in December of 2019, back when things were all face-to-face and pandemics weren't a thing yet. Mm-hmm. And I actually opted for, it was about accessibility and about inclusion. I opted to make my podcast available both simultaneously online, and also I was delivering to people in a room. So this was my first ever experience of hybrid. And as you can probably expect, it was chaos and it was probably a really bad idea, but it was also a really good idea because I did a hell of a lot of learning from this experience. So I felt a little bit like I cheated when it actually came to shifting everything online and then going back into the classroom because I'd already had this experience. So when I started at Durham University, I shifted jobs in the middle of a pandemic, which again, possibly not something I'd recommend. That was an interesting experience. But I was asked to put together a report with a couple of colleagues about what we call at Durham dual mode teaching, which is the same as hybrid, different terminology. And in that report, what I was doing was I was a participant online and I had a colleague in the classroom and we were peer observing people and giving them feedback on their teaching. And that was then used to make recommendations of how to set up classrooms. So that was the foundation work really for what is currently used at Durham University. So that's kind of where I started, and I'm going to leave it at that point and let Cecilia come in.
Okay, so talking really my personal experience, I have to say, as at the University of Nottingham, we started thinking about hybrid during the pandemic, really as an emergency measure. And as a matter of fact, I mean, I have to admit, I was quite against hybrid teaching at the beginning, there were quite a few colleagues. So in my role of digital learning director, there were quite a few colleagues telling me, oh, you know, I walk into a classroom, I put my laptop on, and I can cater for both students, for both groups, you know, in the classroom or and online. And I said, look, I really don't recommend that. It's not that easy. You know, I really absolutely don't recommend it. And then I found myself in the situation when I needed to do it. And I tried to do it, to elaborate it a bit more, rather than just sticking a laptop in. I kind of tried to work the technology a bit better. And I emphasize here the point of technology, because at that stage, it was really just to make sure that the technology could do something for us, and realize that, in fact, with what we had, it was actually possible. My reluctance at the beginning was, we don't have the technology for it. I started looking around for examples of hybrid teaching, and there is a lot out there, especially from the States, I have to say, but from very, very experienced institutions with all kind of singing and dancing equipment that allows them to deliver effective hybrid. We didn't have that. So this is why I was very reluctant in discouraging people. But then I realized when I had to do it for my own teaching that it was actually quite possible with, of course, a bit of adjustments, not only in terms of technology, but in terms of how we approach the session and how we bridge the distance between the online and the face-to-face people. So when then I heard people saying, oh, I did it and it didn't work, I think quite stubbornly, I thought, well, hold on a minute. Why did it not work? Mm-hmm. And it transpired. It was because of the technology. And that's when and then I thought, okay, hold on a minute. If it is the technology, then we need to make sure that the technology serves our purpose. So that's how I started exploring it more and more and realized that, yes, the technology, we need the technology, but hybrid teaching can actually give us quite a lot of opportunities. So that was really my quite skeptical at the beginning, but then moving more and more into it, practicing it myself and realizing that I would not want to let technology win over us, and started working in
right. Yeah, but I think it's really good what you said, because after all, reflection is the name of the game in the higher education. So basically you reflect now on what you have experienced, and it seems that you have changed your approach, or you have changed your opinion on the thing itself.
Totally.
And if I'm correct, and Dominic is going probably to give some more details on this, because you met in these environments, you also extended your belief in the technology in a wider community. Am I right, Dominic?
Yeah, that's right. And I'll come on to that in just a second. There's a couple of very interesting points that you both raised there as well. Rachel, it's interesting that you were exploring this area before the pandemic anyway, as Sivan mentioned. I think there are a few of us that were scattered in various different places, obviously more pedigree in the US there, that were looking into the possibilities that bringing online and in-person together in real time could actually afford. You know, what can you gain from bringing these two modes together in real time? Cecilia, you mentioned being initially skeptical. I think that's probably the healthiest way to start getting into hybrid as well, because it makes you ask all the right questions at first. Something that you've both done, and this is the context in which I met you, is that you've both taken these particular challenges, questions you've faced, experiences you've got, and you've convened communities around. So Rachel, I know you started a Twitter chat about it for people's experiences there. And of course, Titi, you organized this workshop, which I assume was intended for Nottingham colleagues, but opened out more widely. And you probably found quite a large interest in it. Thinking about community events, what have you learnt about hybrid teaching from bringing these communities together? And did any of these perspectives that you got, did any of them surprise you?
So, okay, so thank you very much. Yes, the workshop that was held at the beginning of January was actually supposed to be a small workshop. But we then realized that people just showed an enormous interest, and we had more and more people registering, more and more people sending abstracts in. So we thought, oh, okay, we can't really say no to people. We still wanted to keep it to a workshop level. So this is why, for instance, we didn't really call it a conference. We keep on talking about it as a workshop, because we really wanted to be a place for sharing. And because the actual rationale for the workshop goes back to what I was saying before, the fact that at Nottingham University, we weren't really prepared for hybrid. I had done quite a bit of work at the time of starting, thinking of organizing the workshop, but especially what I had realized is that there was a big misunderstanding of what hybrid is and what hybrid means. And this is precisely what I said before. You know, people just think that you can walk into a room and suddenly start talking about, you know, with face-to-face and online people, or even worse, I would say, to, you know, have people online, students online listening to you. And there we are, we're doing hybrid. And of course, getting more and more into it and documenting myself, realized that this is not the case. And the rationale was of the workshop. It was really to bring together practitioners at all level of their ability, so to speak, in hybrid, all level of, you know, yeah, skills in doing hybrid, and especially in the different areas of hybrid. So in particular, pedagogy and technology. In general, when we talk about digital technologies in education, but especially for hybrid, it has emerged how the two need to talk together in order for hybrid to work. So really the rationale for creating this community, which has now actually developed into a mailing list, which hopefully we will soon start having kind of useful conversation through the mailing list. It was really kind of to bring together people and learn from each other. So what has surprised me? Well, or rather, what have I learned from it? Well, first of all, that there are various models of hybrid. There isn't just a one fits all, that we need to think in those terms. So we need to think that every institution has different needs. And when we plan for, well, for anything really, but let's talk about hybrid, we need to see how, which model would satisfy our needs, or which model is sustainable for our needs. So this is one thing that I've learned. I've learned that there is a serious commitment amongst techie people, as well as teachers, academics, to make it work, to overcome the technological limitations. We cannot step back and say we don't have the technology and therefore we can't do it. No, let's make sure that the technology works from us. And what else? And then I kind of realized that, as I said earlier, that with the exception of pockets of excellent practice, really, and probably City is one of those, in the UK, hybrid has been adopted mainly for pandemic. Well, Rochelle has just proven me wrong, in the sense that you've tried it even before the pandemic, but generally speaking, it's probably something that people have looked into in order to respond to the pandemic. Whereas in other parts of the world, the practice is much more advanced, and then we need to learn from that. And this is why, for instance, in the workshop, we did try to bring in people from Europe, well, certainly outside England and outside Europe too.
Very interesting. And of course, we had a keynote from all the way from Australia and in that particular workshop. Thank you, Tatilia. That's very, very interesting. I'm sure James would appreciate the different models approach given talk about portfolios of spaces there, James. Let me move over to Rochelle.
So I think my context is ever so slightly different. So my work with this within the community, I actually hosted a learning and teaching in higher education chat, and this was back in January. So this was possibly just under a year on from when people had started experimenting with dual mode and practice had shifted online. One of the reasons that I actually put myself forward to do this and identified this as an area to have a conversation about was because it's something that wasn't going away. And it's something that a lot of people within my institution, but also within my wider networks, were very nervous about. So I took a decision, and again, this might not be a good decision, but I figured it made sense to have a difficult conversation and give people that opportunity to air their concerns and to listen to how other people are dealing with things and talk about things like the different terminology that can be really confusing and really complex. I think what came out of it is that there's sort of a collective understanding that this is a very murky area that is potentially very new to many people, even though these technologies may have been happening or may have been used previously. And as you say, Cecilia, and there's different pockets of expertise that have developed. I think for many people who are actually having to teach in this way, it is a very complicated and new and maybe even scary experience. I think one of the real benefits of having this conversation within the community was that it gave people that chance to be honest and say, actually, I don't really know what I'm doing and it's not working, or it is working, but then also learn from one another. So it was great to encourage people to make those connections with other people so that they could then pick up new ideas and maybe just feel a little bit more reassured that we're kind of all in that same boat together while we figure this out. I think the thing that really surprised me from this is how resilient people are and how kind people are, even in the face of a very, very challenging situation. You have a lot of people who are freely giving their time and making opportunities for others to develop just so that people feel comfortable with what they're doing. And I think that really highlights how great our sector can be. And that surprised me, because although I kind of knew it happened and I knew it was a thing, I don't think I quite saw it quite so predominantly as I did when I started looking into this. And yeah, that's my take on it.
Thank you, Rochelle. That's actually quite comforting to hear you say that. I totally agree with what you've said about, how the community actually works in practice of mutual support, mutual head shaking, and agreeing that this is, I think you used the word murky. I really like that.
Can I just pick on a point that Rochelle has just made?
Yeah, please do.
Rochelle, thank you very much. That was excellent. You made some very good points there. At one point you said people having to do this. I mean, one thing that has come out of the, kind of bringing together people is that we are now stepping out of the having to do this. I think we are now more and more considering, well, we may actually abandon it if we don't want to, in a way, perhaps at the moment, yet still. There will be perhaps in 3 to 5 years' time when the universities, the institutions themselves, they will say, we need to cater for online and face-to-face at the same time. But from what I actually got from the community that I've put together is that there is this desire to move away from I have to do it, but rather I really think that there is a great potential there, a great opportunity, and I want to explore it in those terms.
The question I wanted to put to you both kind of follows on from what Rochelle was just saying about mutual support and think more about institutional support perhaps. So where would an individual at your institution go to learn more, understand about hybrid teaching? Perhaps even if their institution doesn't provide much support, where else would they go? Maybe come back to you, Cecilia.
Okay, so there is quite a lot out there, I have to say. I think there is plenty of good practice being documented online. There is a lot happening. As I said, many good examples, especially from American institutions, which means, and Australia, in fact, as we've got to know during the workshop here at Nottingham and in other activities that I was talking about hybrid. There is quite a lot in Australia also that is kind of developing in that direction. What I found when I was looking for support in those terms is that the structure and the needs of those institutions, the institutions that I looked at, were different. And therefore, the temptation is to say, oh, well, but this is not what we do. These are not the kind of students that we recruit, or we certainly don't have this type of technology and so on. But again, I mean, it's necessary to pick what we need from what we find online. So I think there is
having to help themselves in a lot of cases if you say there wasn't necessarily an institutional structure there? Because just jumping back to you, Rochelle, I know from the work that I was doing last year, we found a lot of very, very comprehensive, useful support about hybrid teaching from Durham's own pages, which I guess you were and your colleagues are part of. So we cribbed from you, basically.
Oh, great. Well, I mean, that's really useful. I think when you put together any kind of guidance or support, the thing that you want is to help as many people as possible. So, yeah, that's really good to know.
Now it's coming, the guy who is not education technologist, yeah? I'm just a practitioner. And if I want to be effective in hybrid teaching, and if I want to improve or maybe try to have a notch up in my way of delivery, we've heard from you, Cecilia, that you became aware of the advanced approaches that are actually happening in the world, but also papers maybe who are not very familiar with it. Maybe Rochelle can reflect on that first. So the effective practitioner of hybrid teaching, how can you improve yourself? Or do you have anywhere else like a community of practice that can help you become better in what at the end, as we have heard from Cecilia, might be an option? So basically, how to improve if you are a practitioner, if you're alone, and how to go about it.
Interesting question. And I think the first thing that you can do to help yourself is to acknowledge that you don't need to know everything right now. I think a lot of people go into this with very grand expectations of what they should be able to do. And the reality of this is that it's a very new mode for many. Although you can look around the sector and you can learn from other people, the reality of reading about what somebody else has done and doing it yourself can be quite different. So try it out in a low stakes environment. Find somebody that you really trust, or maybe find some students that you're comfortable experimenting with and try it out. Make sure that you feel comfortable. If you don't feel comfortable, that's absolutely okay. If you're in a situation with students and you don't feel comfortable, maybe tell them. I think this can be a really great opportunity for getting students involved, not just in the development of the work that you're doing, but also get them involved in how you work the hybrid learning. Because at the end of the day, if you're trying to teach students, they need to be able to learn from it. And for them to learn from it, they need to understand what you're trying to do. And I think one of the biggest things that has been highlighted for me is that the worst learning experience in a dual mode or a hybrid context is one where the tutor is really stressed and can't communicate with you what they're struggling with. I think the people that you're working with, irrespective of whether that is other colleagues, whether it's academic staff, whether it's students, they're all human. And I think it's really important to understand that for a start, it's okay to fail. So if it all goes wrong, that's absolutely no problem. But also, it's really important to be honest about where you're at, and you'll be surprised how many people will help you. So if you're really struggling with something, the chances are if you say, hey, listen, I'm really struggling with this, there'll be somebody in that room that will say, okay, well, I've had this kind of situation, let me help. And I think they're the things. So it's not necessarily to look in a certain part of a community, but it's just to trust that other people are there to support and nobody's there watching what's happening. And I guarantee to you that everybody in that room will have had a similar situation and will be sat there thinking, I'm glad it's not me this time, but they definitely won't be judging you for what's happening.
It's almost like a war stories, yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And just trust in the people.
Yeah. Okay. Cecilia, thanks, Rochelle, thank you so much. Cecilia, does it align with what you experienced in your environment, in the communities that you participate in?
Yes, I mean, certainly in terms of being very realistic and not being afraid of taking risks, because the community is there to help. And as we've discovered by our initiative, community or practice initiative, there is actually quite a lot of help out there. In my experience, in terms of becoming an effective or improving the way we deliver hybrid more and more effectively, there are a few things. I mean, the first thing is really to understand the pedagogy behind it. That, again, is not just a necessity, is not just to cater for different type, you know, different students being in different locations, but is an actual, to take it as an encompassing pedagogical approach. This comes actually from the keynote at the workshop. We really emphasize that hybrid teaching is not walking into a session and that's the hybrid session. Mm. It should really be seen as a hybrid overall module, program, set of lessons, whatever. It kind of goes beyond that. So really improve the effectiveness of our hybrid approach is really to understand the pedagogical rationale behind it and make our students understand that and make sure that our students understand it, why we are doing it. So that tapping onto what Rachel was saying, you know, learn with the students and the students learn with you. The other thing I would say is to avoid comparing online and face-to-face. Again, it's different experiences. Both can be good, but they're not necessarily, well, they're not the same. And we know that they're not the same experience. They're comparable. They can be comparable. They can both be good, but they're not the same experience.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Well, it shows how wide it is.
Our next question is thinking a bit more into the future. Based on what you've learned, what you've been talking about just now, how do you see the future of higher education in terms of hybrid delivery models? And I think you were saying earlier, Cecilia, it's not just the one model. You know, are we just going back to normal or are we looking at other opportunities here? Perhaps you could answer first, Rochelle.
I'm gonna go with what I hope will happen for this one. So I think that dual mode hybrid, whatever you want to call it, anything like this, it gives us so much more flexibility and it can make a learning experience so much more inclusive. And I hope from that perspective that we retain it and that people feel encouraged to carry on working in this way. Like Cecilia was just saying, it's really important to acknowledge that this is a different mode in itself. So no, it's not face-to-face and no, it's not online learning, it's completely different. And I would like for that mode to become more explored and more understood pedagogically so that we can give people real concrete guidance that supports them beyond sort of what we currently do. But yeah, that, I think the main thing is that I really hope we can retain that flexibility for the sake of the people who teach as well as the people who are taught, because I think that's just so valuable and so important, and especially for having an inclusive experience, which to me is the most important thing.
Thank you, Rochelle. Yeah, that's a lot to think about. But while we're thinking about that, over to you, Cecilia.
Absolutely, inclusivity. I mean, there is not much more to say. I mean, it is a hope that the inclusivity affordances of hybrid teaching are really understood in the right way, I would say, not exploited and capitalized on. So I hope that there is a gradual move, I guess I mentioned earlier, to from necessity to opportunity, so to see the opportunities. It becomes less and less controversial in a way. I think there's still a certain level of controversies around it, and we become more and more aware of the actual opportunities for teachers, as Rachelle said, for teacher and students, and we keep on moving, and then it certainly stays with us, as we said, in one way or another. But whatever model an institution adopts, to make sure that is a pedagogically sound model, that is technologically supported model, and that it suits the needs of the institutions and the teachers and the learners of that institution.
So has it, just as a quick supplementary before we finish off, do you think that it's opened your eyes or other people's eyes to other opportunities, as you put it, both of you?
Definitely. I think I mentioned about my geographical location, and without the opportunity to be a remote worker, I would never work in the institution that I work in. And I'd like to think that they benefit from that as much as I do. The fact that I have a perspective from even a different part of the country. Yeah, it's definitely opened my eyes to opportunities that we can afford people that maybe we couldn't previously. And also things like making, so some students, I think, perform better online, just like some students perform better in the classroom. And this has given real opportunities to those students. So yeah, hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So I'm going to quickly come in and move on to the last questions. I'm going to roll it straight in because I know that we need to wrap this conversation up quite quickly. Question we ask all of our guests, and we'll come to Rachel first in this case as well, is imagine a spectrum. You know, we use a lot of aviation analogies on this podcast, and we're using kind of slightly related one, fight or flight. Fight as in you run as far away in the opposite direction of this idea of hybrid teaching as you can, and flight, you run towards it. It allows you to take off. It gives you opportunities. Rachel, where on the fight or flight spectrum, our fight or flight spectrum, would you put yourself?
I think I am looking for my wings. I'm ready to take off. I want to dive into this. I want to explore it. I want to figure out the murkiness and understand all of the nuance and the messy gray areas. Yeah, I absolutely am not scared by a challenge, so this is perfect.
That's a great answer. Brilliant. Tatilia, where are you on the spectrum?
Well, I think I'm echoing Rachel, really, in the sense that yes, absolutely, I'm fully committed in kind of, you know, making it work, so to speak, for the institution, for education, but especially to provide that kind of inclusivity and flexibility that we've already mentioned, especially thinking about those groups of students that may not, at the moment, may not be reached with the kind of education that we provide. Again, different institutions provide different types of education to different students, but this is why different models for different needs. And this is what we need to explore, really, fully take it, ready for the challenge.
Really value those perspectives, because we've had a lot more uncertainty in some of our guests as well. So seeing two guests that are very happy to embrace this and take it further and share things with the wider community is fantastic.
Yeah, your optimism is encouraging. Thank you.
Is there anything that we haven't asked you that you would like to, any points that you'd like to make that we haven't asked you in this conversation?
No, not really. I mean, we haven't specifically looked at the practice, but I think that is, you know, kind of once you're actually in the classroom, what is it that you can do? So we talked quite a bit in kind of a more general terms, but that's, I think that's fine in the sense that we can leave the technicalities to the different contexts. Because even that, you know, kind of, you know, the type of rooms you're in, the types of students you have an impact on the experience of both the teachers and the students, on the way you develop hybrid, in the way you look for, you develop your own model of hybrid teaching. So no, really, I think we've looked at a number of perspectives. So it was very interesting talking to you.
You have to watch this.
We know you need to disappear, Rachel, don't you?
Yeah, I need to jump into another session. But thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much too.
It's been nice really meeting good to hear
from you. You too. Hopefully our paths will cross again.
Okay.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thank you very much.
So that wraps up episode 6 today. I think that was, again, quite a different conversation from our previous ones, but an equally fascinating one, and two really great perspectives. Let me go to Ivan first. Ivan, what are your key reflections on that conversation?
Thank you, Dominic. It's really interesting to listen to people and their, I would say, confessions, because what we heard from Cecilia, it was really almost like a confession of her reflection on what was before and after. And then also to combine with Rachel and her story of trying something that she doesn't advise us to try. And you and me, Dominic, remember the textual alliance with what we've done. So, well, I think it for me, it was really a collaboration or basically addition to my belief that technology is one thing, but we need to believe in ourselves. And it is okay to change. So whoever listens to this podcast, I would say you are not alone. We've been in that spot before you. James.
Yes. Thank you, Ivan. A couple of comments. One that Cecilia made about the commitment from technical colleagues to make this work. And hopefully a later podcast will look into the technicalities and design considerations a bit more. We talked a lot about the pedagogy and different experiences, but I think, you know, we can't run away from this in the fight or flight. We have to make it work where it has to work. I really like the idea of treating as a separate pedagogic model. I think that's a really helpful way to think about this, because it's not trying to be face-to-face or online. It's something in the middle, and I think it needs its own identity. And lastly, I was very reassured by Rachel and her, as you just said, Ivan, you know, the idea of that, let's be honest, lots of people are nervous about this. It's murky, it's her adjective. And, you know, there is a collective understanding that we need to experiment and learn from one another, and that's okay. It was almost like a counselling session, so I rather like that.
That's fair enough, and I'm going to echo your comments there about what Rachel made as well. I like that she talked about it being it making sense to have a difficult conversation. I don't think that many, other than those with a long historical track record of doing this sort of thing, like the, you know, the chap that invented Hyflex back in, you know, 15 years ago. I don't think that many people actively chose to be in this space at this time. It was circumstances that made a lot of people have to teach in a hybrid way. So, you know, there are difficult conversations to be had around there, and it's all right to be accepting of failure and to give people a chance to be honest, as Rachel said as well. Ivan, did you want to come in on something
there? Yeah, and also I think what we can say, it's the moment in time where we are flooded by technology, we all assume that when we have to apply it in something that is not maybe everyday's life, like teaching itself, would be easy. And that might not be the case, because it's not just another phone call. It's actually juggling people online, in a classroom, in a hybrid mode, and then doing your teaching as well. So I think it's really, as we say in aviation, and I cannot go away from aviation, a proactive approach. So basically trying to assess your hazards in terms of shortcomings, in terms of the challenges in the classroom with the material, and then try to find how to manage these risks, whether you are going to mitigate it or maybe you are going to change approach just for the sake of the ultimate goal. And that's actually learning that has to happen. And I think, after all, this is why we are doing this podcast as well.
James?
Yeah, just to finish up, I totally agree with you, Ivan. I think the final word was probably for me from Rachel. She said that, you know, how resilient people are. Mm. I think we need to remember how resilient we've had to be, but we are resilient and we can cope with change. And it's up to communities of practice to support and encourage that development going forward with these new opportunities that hybrid teaching presents.
So you have been listening to episode 6 of Teaching Here and There today. We hope that you have enjoyed the conversation so far. It's been interesting or useful for you in your own practice. And let's frame it in another way. We should we have some calls to action for you as listeners if you want to help out to spread the conversation. Where you find podcast reviews, you could always, such as Apple Podcasts, you could always give us a nice review, and that helps other people to find this podcast.
You can reach out to us on Twitter. You'll find us at ThatHybridPod. You can send us an email, which is to teachinghereandtherepodcast@gmail.com. Or if you go to our Anchor page, anchor.fm/teachingHereAndThere, you could leave us an audio message and we might even find a way of bringing it into a future episode. So that just leaves for me to thank you very much for listening today, and we'll look forward to joining you again for episode 7.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Ivan.
Thank you, guys.
Teaching Here and There is a podcast brought to you by PSR Production. It's available to listen to on Apple Podcasts, Anchor FM, Spotify, and any web browser.